Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I, Larry Mueller here, and tell you what, we're going to be talking about building a butterfly garden to start the show. And our good friend Lisa Johnson back with us. She's a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County, and looking forward to visiting with her about butterfly gardens and also maybe taking some other questions as well as we move along today. So as we visit with her, I hope you'll join in. Which of your plants maybe attract the most butterflies? What ideas do you have about starting one up? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Lisa Johnson, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Butterflies, of course, they're beautiful and they're a joy to look at, but what other benefits do they provide for our gardens? In other words, why might we want to attract butterflies?
Well, butterflies are, you know, part of the environment, a critical part. And while I'm talking about butterflies, I just want to make an aside quickly. There are 19 species of moth per every species of butterfly.
Wow.
And it has been shown by research that moths are just as or more important in pollination for some species. Now, while butterflies don't really hold a candle to bees in terms of pollination, they are pollinators. They are food for some other critters in the food chain as well. And as you noted, they're just really beautiful insects. And we've lost so many insects, and we really need to be able to support them in order to support the rest of the food chain.
So as we think about building a butterfly garden, I guess the first thing to think about is location. Where in your yard would it be best to plant a butterfly garden?
Well, butterfly gardens are really best sited in sunny locations. Being cold-blooded insects, butterflies have to make sure that they have warmth in order to warm up their flight muscles so that they can fly. You've probably seen butterflies doing what we call a basking behavior, where they're often on a rock or maybe a wooden deck or something like that, cement, opening and closing their wings slowly. And when they're doing that, they're absorbing heat so that they can fly effectively.
Yeah, I was thinking about my Wolfgang Hoffman, my old photography instructor, who told me when I was taking photos of butterflies, if you can kind of, if you got the camera ready or the phone ready, you can kind of get your hand in such a place that it shades the butterfly itself, and then their wings open up, and you get a nice, then you get a nice view of the butterfly wings.
Yeah, that's a really interesting tip.
I think I use that. I've used that, and it actually does work. They'll automatically open up their wings, and then you've got that nice view. Well, so they prefer sun over shade for sure.
Mm-hmm.
How big a space do you need for a butterfly garden?
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be big. If all you have is a balcony or a patio, you can still plant plants in containers that will attract butterflies. The most important thing to have is to understand which, you know, if you're trying to attract a particular species of butterfly, let's just use monarch as an example, they need to have milkweeds in order to have food for their caterpillars. And the caterpillars will only eat milkweed species. So if you wanted to attract that kind of butterfly, you need that what we call a host plant, which is meant to be munched upon, as well as the nectar plants, which are the flowering plants that the adults will feed on. So if you don't have both, You need to you need to get both in order to totally support them. There was one time out here in the teaching garden on the east side of Madison at the extension office, where I was looking at one of our willow trees that we had at the time, and it was covered with a bunch of caterpillars. And you know, when folks see that, their immediate thought is, oh my gosh, I have to get rid of those and protect the plant. But they were actually butterfly larvae, and they were doing what they're supposed to do, which is feed on the willow leaves. So you need to be willing to give up some plant material in order to feed the caterpillars.
Good points. Nan in Washburn has a question that relates to this butterfly issue. Let's go there. Hi, Nan.
Hi, Larry and guest. Say, I have a lot of trees that were damaged by the spongy moth last year, both up here in Washburn and in Madison. And I understand that some of the sprays that are used to treat spongy moth can kill the butterfly larvae and possibly bees as well. Can you help me with that?
Okay.
Yeah, that's a little outside my area. I think you are probably talking about the BT product, which is an organic bacterial-based product that is used to spray leaves. And these would be, yeah, it is possible, certainly. That you could hit butterfly larvae as well. It's really important, though, that we also protect our oak trees in particular from the spongy moth. Now, we're hoping if we have a little more rain here that maybe the rain will do some of that work for us and the spongy moth will get hit by entomophaga and a viral pathogen as well. That will take care of some of that. I'm not sure whether bees would be affected by the BT, but I suppose it is possible. They do use the pollen off of some trees, but many trees being wind pollinated, they aren't as attractive to pollinators. And they do, you know, make every effort to try and you know, protect our pollinating insects. The BT product is applied at exactly the right time. The wind speed has to be right. The relative humidity has to be right. You can't have any rain in the forecast. They have to have the caterpillar at the exact right stage of development so that the product is as effective as it can be. And you have to have the oak leaves expanded to a point where they will be able to hold on to the product. So it's a really interesting but complicated thing. And the spongy moth is hatching now. I found, to my disgust, some little quarter-inch caterpillars had just come out of a egg mass that was on the side of my house that I hadn't seen. So I handily got rid of that. But yeah, they do try and, you know, protect the pollinators at the same time as getting rid of the spongy moth, but it is a balancing sort of thing.
Yeah. Nan, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. I want to go talk about flowers. Let's go through what butterflies like in a garden in terms of flowers. And the shape of the flower matters, as I understand it.
Yeah, it can. Butterflies often like flowers that have kind of a broad platform to land on. You've probably noticed when butterflies fly that, well, they're sort of erratic. They're not the most straightforward flyers. And they do like flowers that not only have a broad platform, but that might be made up of many flowers so that they can stick their proboscis in there and get many sips, shall we say, of nectar. That being said, they still will feed on like tubular hanging flowers, but they do like brightly colored flowers that have an area that they can easily land on.
Yeah, so bright colors. Are there particular colors that might work better than others?
You know, I looked at some of the research about that, and, you know, what it said was, well, they like yellow and red and orange and blue. And I'm like, well, that's pretty much the whole spectrum there. So maybe white is not as popular. But there again, what color are the milkweed flowers? Well, they're kind of a pinky white. And butterflies also really like buttonbush, which is one of our natives, particularly the smaller butterflies like it, and that's a white flower. So I'm not sure that it particularly matters.
And so in terms of food sources for caterpillars, you think the milkweed is the best? Are there others? Well, the buttonbush maybe? Or are there others?
It's going to depend on the butterfly, and I'm not a butterfly expert. I can't tell you necessarily which butterfly feeds on which host plant. But if you want to know that, I highly, highly recommend a book called Common Butterflies of Wisconsin with Native Host and Nectar Plants by Randy Powers. It is an amazing, it's more of a booklet, but it's got a lot of color pictures of the species, and it tells, you know, which butterflies need which host plants. Some are kind of more generalist than the monarch, which is a specialist and needing the milkweed. Another great place to find information about butterflies is the Wisconsin Butterflies website, which is just wisconsinbutterflies.org. And they are part of the Southern Wisconsin Butterfly Association. There are also some resources on the Wisconsin Horticulture website. There's a list of native plants for butterflies. And I just recently put together a kind of infographic on general pollinator plants, and that intersects with butterflies pretty well in most cases.
And where
so
do we get
it's
that?
It's going to vary with the species.
Yeah, and where do we get your post?
That's at the Wisconsin Horticulture site. That's the hort.extension.wisc.edu.
Lisa Johnson, our guest today, started the show by talking about butterflies and plants that you can put in to attract them and help them survive. Great to have Lisa with us. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert's our producer today. Lee Rayburn, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my great friend and guest, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Duane in River Falls has a question for you, Lisa. Let's go there. Hi, Duane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, my wife and I, last summer, over the years, we've been planting different pollinator plants. But last summer, we installed a specific watering dish for bees and butterflies. We just took a flat saucer, like from a large flower pot, put a few different size rocks in there, and put the water in there every day. And we noticed numerous bees and butterflies taking the water from there.
Glad you called in with that, Duane, because providing water is one of those things that we definitely want to think about.
Yeah, in a talk that I recently gave for Badger Talks, one of their quick pick talks, I did mention water sources as being really important for pollinators. My mom's bird bath gets visited by the neighbors' honeybees, but also our native bees as well. And for butterflies, of course, it's particularly important to do what you said, which is have some large flat rocks in there. And for, you know, any pollinator. At the teaching garden here, we actually have a little solar fountain that runs over rocks, and it's just at a very light trickle. And because it wets the rocks, it's a really good surface for butterflies to do what we call puddling behavior. If you've ever been hiking in the wild and you've seen butterflies in a muddy or wet sand area all kind of clustered together and wondered what they're doing, they're absorbing minerals through their feet as well as they can use their tongues for it, but you know, mostly through their feet. And they are absorbing amino acids and different kinds of nutrients. So actually having wet rocks or even a saucer that has some mud or wet sand can be really great for butterflies, especially the males need those to have amino acids for mating purposes.
Mm. Dwayne, thanks again for that input. Appreciate it very much. Do you ever lay out fruit, or should you lay out fruit for kind of attracting butterflies?
Yeah, that's another way that that puddling sort of behavior can be observed. People will put out either some fruit juice or some overripe like cantaloupe or bananas or something like that. That can be another way for butterflies to absorb minerals and so on. However, I usually caution against that, particularly in July, because you are going to get a ton of yellow jackets visiting that kind of environment. So I would rather have you use the mud. Now, that may get some mud daubers in there, but they're not as aggressive as the yellow jackets.
Good points. Nikki emailed, and I knew this would probably happen. Could you please say the name of that Wisconsin butterfly and host plant book again?
Yes, absolutely. It's called Common Butterflies of Wisconsin with Native Host and Nectar Plants, and the author is Randy Powers.
I bet if you typed in Randy Powers,
yep, you probably get that.
Butterflies of Wisconsin, it's probably going to pop right up. I'm guessing. Pam emailed us, which butterfly garden plants are deer resistant?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. Mm.
I'm having trouble.
Yeah, I'd have to cross-reference some of those lists. I mean, usually deer don't tend to like things that are like aromatic or fuzzy or that kind of thing, but it's difficult to be able to take into account the preference of your particular deer because they do have different preferences, sometimes regional preferences as well, where they may eat something in one area of the country that they don't eat in other areas of the country.
That's interesting.
What you might want to do is take a look at our list of it's a publication called Plants. Oh boy, what is it? Plants Not Preferred by Deer or something on that order. And it is at the, you should be able to find it at the Wisconsin Horticulture site or the Learning Store. And it has a list of plants that deer don't like. And if you would want to cross-reference that with Randy's book or the publication that I put out. I'm just not coming up with anything in particular right now that deer don't like.
Well, they'll pretty
we
much
do
eat
have,
anything if they're
pretty
hungry.
Pretty good deer pressure here at the teaching garden, and they seem to pretty much leave our natives alone. They go after our apple trees and other things, but they don't seem to munch on our natives as much.
Mark in New Glarus sent us an email. Are the wildflower packets generally good for butterflies? They usually have about 12 different flower types, Mark says.
It really depends. A lot of those are going to be non-native annual species, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But sometimes they include some invasives like Dame's Rocket. I've seen that show up in some of those mixes. So ideally, you would want to use something that is perennial native plants. Now, being a horticulturist, I also provide non-native plants, and the butterflies seem to like those quite as well. But often those plants are not host plants, so they would only support the nectar needs and perhaps some of the pollen needs, but not the host plant needs. So it would kind of only support half of the life cycle.
Terry in Dallas, Wisconsin, I'm thinking, not Dallas, Texas, is with us next. Let's go there. Hi, Terry.
Hi, wonderful show, Larry. Very enjoyable. I just got to add my 2 cents. 3 years ago, I and my wife, we took 14 acres and put it in set aside. And actually, we took an acre and a half of that and made a pollinator mix of 27 different native prairie seeds. And last year, it was black-eyed Susies as far as you could see. It was, and with other plants, it was absolutely beautiful. We loved it so much that we killed a half an acre of our lawn to do some more this spring. So just wanted to comment on that.
Oh, thanks, Terry, for calling. Lisa, what do you think?
That's great. I mean, and not only will it attract butterflies, but it also will support our native bees and beetles and other pollinators as well.
Oh, absolutely. Might even see a turkey or two wandering,
oh, yeah,
through, wandering through there, Terry. I'm betting. Thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. Appreciate it. You can join in too if you have a question other than pollinators to plants to attract butterflies. That's fine too. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Ramsey in Wautoma next. Ramsey, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. So just want to say I have tons of perennials for the birds and the bees, but my question is, I have tuberous begonias for my hanging baskets that I put out, and I keep them under grow lights. You know, I get them started down there. I brought them up into my sunroom, and they're blooming, but they're really leggy. Can I pinch them back safely?
Begonias?
Yeah, they're tuberous.
Depending on what they look like, you could. If you're just seeing a couple of very long-stemmed leaves and you're not seeing a central set of leaves, then you can't really. What you need to be able to pinch them back is a node that has new growth coming from it. If you want to either shoot us an email picture here at the show, or if you want to send it to me at my office, I can better advise you on that.
Yeah, you can send a photo to ideas@WPR.org, we'll see. But you really need to have leaves. You need to have you need to have leaves. So if the leaves are all at the top, you don't want to be pinching them off, basically. If you want to pinch, you got to pinch down to where there are leaves forming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go, Ramsey.
It's difficult to describe.
Yeah, it is. It is. Thank you for calling, and go ahead and send us a photo if you'd like. Mary Ann in Whitewater, we'll go to you. Hi, Mary Ann.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a problem because I would like to do a butterfly garden, and I have permission from my church. There's an area that's not being used, and I thought it would be just perfect for a butterfly garden, and I got permission to do it. However, there are people have concerns, and their concerns is they want to limit how high the plants can be to like 15 inches, and that's kind of hard for a wild for wildflowers. And they're also concerned about it attracting rats. And I don't think there's any. Is that something they should be concerned about?
A wildflower garden is not going to attract rats.
Rats, no. You know, I hear that every once in a while, and I wonder where that comes from. But no, that will not be something that you have to worry about attracting rats. It's unfortunate with the height restriction, but I think we could work around that a little bit. There are some shorter, like even... there's a very short version of Liatris, which is one of the butterflies' very favorite. It's called Cobalt, and that one typically is going to be about 15 to 18 inches. Some of the Coreopsis you could do. But like even the butterfly flower, if you're wanting to attract monarchs, is going to be about 18 to 20 maybe 24 inches. So that's going to be a bit of a problem. I think you can probably kind of get close with it, but yeah, that's too bad.
I'd say 15 to 20 inches. If you had 20 inches, if and who's going to be out there with a ruler? To be perfectly honest, you're going to have a lot of plants that are 12 inches to 15 inches, and you're going to have some that are 20 inches scattered through it, and it'll just make it look nicer.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if they're all the same height, that's not a very interesting garden.
No. So I definitely go ahead with it. Mary.
Yeah, I would too. And again, I think you can work with that restriction if you can bend it a little bit up to, like Larry said, about 18 to 20 inches. I think you'll do okay.
Yeah. Good luck with it, Mary Ann. And don't worry about rats.
Yes.
Don't worry about rats. Bridget and Seymour, your turn. Hi, Bridget.
Hi. I have a prairie that my husband built around our house. It's 4 acres, kind of in a U shape around it, next to a ditch. And he gets the perennial leaves. We've got dock and Canadian thistle and, oh, my favorite, the burdock, the little porcupine eggs.
The fruits are almost like, well, that's what Velcro is based on.
Yeah, exactly.
But what can I do? This is the third, and I'm a master gardener.
You were breaking up a lot, Bridget. Your husband, did something, and killed off the perennials that were then replaced by Canada thistle and other weeds. And your question, I think, is how do I get rid of, well, Canada thistle, good luck with that, but the other weeds, well, including Canada thistle, you have to give it a try, I suppose.
Yeah, okay. I'm assuming that's Bridget's question as well. So some of these are perennials, the most troublesome ones, the thistle and the burdock. If hand pulling is not an option, then you are left with chemical controls, and you are left with something like cardboard. And if you did cardboard, you could try that for a season, or you could try what they call occultation or solarization. Now, solarization works best when, well, so does occultation. When you have a lot of sun, what you would need to do is either mow or otherwise cut down as close to the ground as you can, and then cover the area with either clear plastic, that's solarization, or black plastic, which is occultation. And the idea is that it will help to get rid of those weeds by preventing them from getting water. And the same thing more or less applies with cardboard, except that they will get moisture through the cardboard, but they won't get light. Now, the problem is it does nothing to get rid of a seed bank. So if you went in there and tilled, for example, you'd be bringing up all kinds of new seed. So some people like to actually do a combination of chemical and mechanical. So maybe they cut down the weeds, they solarize the area, wait for, take it off after 4 to 6 weeks, see what comes up, and then spray it, and then use solarization again or use cardboard. So it kind of depends on how much time you're willing to put into it, whether or not you're willing to use chemical controls. Certainly with something like thistle, it is really difficult to control by hand means. The only other thing I can suggest is planting a cover crop of either sorghum or sorghum Sudan grass. There's been some research that shows that will help particularly control thistle. It is a big plant. It's going to get to like 5 feet tall. So you might need a season or so of that. So those are pretty much your options as far as I can see them.
Yeah, there you go, Bridget. Thanks so much for calling. Sue and McGuanigo emailed us. They have sandy, gravelly soil. It's in full sun. And wondering what type of plants for butterflies would be recommended for this type of sandy, gravelly soil in full sun?
Yeah, well, there are a number of our limestone prairies, which are fairly similar environments, and a lot of our what we call xeric prairie plants would be good ones for that kind of environment. Ones that I can think of off the top of my head would be for the early spring, hask flower. And if you, you're going to want to provide something season round. Something like some of the liatris will do well there. And liatris is a real butterfly magnet. So that's a little bit later season. You've got some earlier season flowering things too. Certainly some of the asters will be okay there as well. And those would be late season flowers. So what you need to do is kind of establish a spectrum of those things. And I would take a look at my my list of pollinator plants that might help you a little bit. I'm trying to think where else we could find a list of xeric plants.
If you go to Prairie Nursery as an example of,
yeah.
a business that has, and there may be, and there are certainly others, but Prairie Nursery just comes to mind. If you go to the Prairie Nursery website, they have a list of plants that do well under those kinds of conditions. Well, under all kinds of conditions, but you know, they're fairly specific in what they list.
And there are, you know, a ton of great plants that would do okay there. Prairie smoke is another one, although that's not a great one for butterflies, but lavender hyssop, prairie onion.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a bunch of different ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck with that. Karen in Marshfield, we'll go to you next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I was listening to the caller just previous about the burdock and the thistle.
Yeah.
And I use a more organic kind of chemical solution. I use Dawn liquid and vinegar. And it's very successful against all sorts of broadleaf weeds like that. It will kill off things next to it, so you have to be careful in a garden.
Yeah, it's not going to kill Canada thistle. I'm pretty sure of that. But
it can work on smaller annual weeds. There are some products that are labeled by the EPA that do contain acetic acid, 5%, which is what vinegar is, will often top kill things, but not kill the roots, unless, again, it's a small annual weed. But yeah, it usually doesn't work for something like a perennial. But there are some products that are more like 20%. And again, those are labeled. I can't technically recommend things that are not labeled by the EPA as an herbicide because it would not be legal for me to do so. I have to stick to the ones that are recommended. And there certainly are some organic products such as that higher concentration of acetic acid. But again, it would be really, I'd be very surprised if that actually would kill burdock or thistle, but it certainly might kill other things.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen, thanks for calling. Listener called, couldn't stay with us. They said deer have not touched their milkweed. And I thought of milkweed right away, too, because I've noticed that, too. They
did at my mom's place.
They did.
I was shocked. And you could tell it was deer feeding and not rabbit because they make an awful mess of things because they don't make a clean cut. They grab and pull because they don't have teeth on both, you know, upper and lower jaw. So they tend to rip stuff. And I was like, really? You're eating
shocked.
The milkweed? Yeah. So again, it depends on your
depends on your deer, I guess. Oh, man. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on WPR. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. We've been talking about transforming your backyard into a butterfly paradise, but we've been getting other questions as well, and we'll certainly welcome any gardening question that you might have. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. 642-1234, or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. What kinds of trees and shrubs are most useful for butterflies?
Oh, okay. Well, oaks will support hundreds of different Lepidoptera, whether they're moths or whether they're butterflies. Musselwood is a nice one too for, I think it is the tiger swallowtail that it's a host plant for. Black cherry is another nice one that a lot of butterflies like. Although I don't really recommend it for yards, willows can provide both pollen and habitat for as a host plant. Let's see, the buttonbush I had already recommended. What else have we got? Clethra.
Sweet
pepper bush. That one blooms in July, which is kind of unusual. It'll take partial shade. It's a beautiful flower, and it smells like vanilla, so you can enjoy it. and it gets good fall color. So there are a number of different cultivars out there, some of which bloom white, some of which bloom pink, and they are just really nice for pollinators. So that's a few of them.
That's a pretty good list, though. Mary in Wauwatosa, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I had been growing a parsley plant inside my house over the winter, and it was just huge. And I planted it outside in the summertime, and I came out one day, and there was nothing left of it but, like, sticks.
Oh.
And on it, I found two caterpillars, large caterpillars, and I killed them. And unfortunately, later I found out they were from swallowtail butterflies.
Yeah,
the bright green and black. They're beautiful caterpillars. Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that is one of their favorites. They do like a number of plants that are in that parsley family.
Yeah, you kind of feel bad afterwards when you find out. Mary, I'm sorry they ate up your parsley, but I'm also sorry that you squashed them before you knew
plant
what
two parsleys next time.
Plant two parsley. And sounds like you do a pretty good job if you got the parsley to grow that well in the house. You must have had
That's an accomplishment.
Let's just take an aside on that. Mary, did you have artificial light on that parsley indoors?
No, I just had it in a really good window.
Oh,
nice.
Okay. Oh, man. Thanks so much for calling. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Mother's Day coming up. Which flowers are your favorite to recommend in a bouquet for mom?
Oh, goodness. That's a tough one.
thinking about it, I can tell a little story. I always gave my mother flowers for Mother's Day, and I was born on Mother's Day that year. Which she always said afterwards, that was not the gift I was expecting on Mother's Day. But I would always give her a flower, a vase. And when my mom and dad retired, she said, you know, I've got some vases in the basement that I've been collecting from you, and I'm wondering if you want any of them. And I went down into the basement, and there was a row of about 30 or so vases that I had been giving her over the years. Oh my gosh. Anyway,
that's awesome. You're a good son.
Anyway, and I don't even recall the flowers that I, you know, it's something a little different every year, but.
Mm-hmm. I like mixed bouquets myself. I prefer them to like straight roses or straight mums or something like that. I will say if you have lilies in a bouquet, keep your cats away from them. A friend of mine lost his cat because the cat ate just a piece of a leaf off of a lily. And they are, it's really, really bad for cats. So if you have lily bouquets, make sure that, and I love lilies, but.
Yeah, I do too.
I would make sure that your cat doesn't get to them.
Or
also daffodils and some of those other bulbs.
Yeah. Although, you know, just what I should have done over the years from time to time, or maybe I could have had a whole flower garden for her if I had gotten some potted flowers that she could have then put outside, perhaps. Maybe that would have been better. Well,
sure.
A listener called, couldn't stay with us. They say North Star cherry tree is great for butterflies. North Star cherries.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of the fruit trees are attractive to butterflies as well as bees.
Yeah, so that's
a
good...
And actually moths are pollinating them at night, too, when you don't even see them.
Yeah, that's correct. Kate emailed us. They have a nice hardy stand of Joe Pieweed that the butterflies love.
Oh, but yeah.
Every year, though, they get covered with aphids.
Yeah, you know, a lot of our prairie plants are able to tolerate aphids. It doesn't seem to bother them so much. Our cup plant out here that we used to have used to get covered with these orange aphids, but it didn't seem to really affect the plant the way that it does with some of our non-natives. The only problem is that you do worry about aphids carrying various plant diseases, which I'm sure Brian Huddleston could talk at length about. You can try spraying them off with insecticidal soap or a good hard spray of water. The thing is, though, that aphids are also part of the environment, and they are food for other insects and food for birds as well.
We have an email from, actually it was a call from Sue. She couldn't stay with us. Wondering about rattlesnake master. Is it a good plant for your garden?
Yeah, that we have some here at the Teaching Garden in our rain garden. And it's a fun plant.
I'm not sure what it even looks like.
Yeah, so it has leaves that look somewhat like yucca leaves, which is where the species name Yuccafolium comes from. And then they've got a tall stem, and they have these spiky white flowers. It looks like just a ball of spikes. And it is very popular with pollinators. So it's about 3 feet tall, and it's not the fastest spreader, but you know it will eventually get more. So in spite of the fact that it's a white flower, pollinators like it, and I've seen butterflies on it as well. And that's a native plant.
Yeah, it's a native. Okay, Al from Herbster emailed. Could you relist the shrubs and trees for butterflies that you talked about a bit ago, the shrubs and trees?
Sure. And you can also find this information if you do an internet search for Badger Quick Picks. My talk on butterfly gardens is there, and you can see all the slides and the pictures of the plants as well. So I do list some of those. So for butterflies, oaks are recommended. Let's see what else. Oh, one I didn't put in there was pagoda dogwood. spring azures, use that as a food source. Mussel wood. I talked about buttonbush. New Jersey tea is another one that I didn't mention the first time. Serviceberry is another one that they like, and black cherry.
So a lot.
Yeah, and you know, that's just a little drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Those are just some of the more common ones. There are certainly more out there. Oh, and lindens. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
I forgot about lindens. So wonderfully fragrant.
Oh, man. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa, UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. Always fun having her with us today. By the way, it's World Press Freedom Day, and, you know, the news never stops. Especially this year with an election coming on. And our WPR network of bureaus, you get timely Wisconsin stories, valuable context. So I hope you'll take a moment today to support the independent news you and all of Wisconsin rely on. Donate now at WPR.org/donate or phone 888-202-2552. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and my guest today, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. We've been talking a lot about building a butterfly garden, and we can still talk some more about that, but she'll also answer all your flower, your shrub, or your tree questions. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I've got a friend who said he was putting his tomato plants and his green pepper plants out in the garden, and I said, no, you can't do that, and he said, hey, it's warm. And I said, well, you're shaking. You're agreeing with me on this one, Lisa.
Yes, I'm covering my eyes. oh dear. Let me tell you, I work part-time for a greenhouse on the weekends during the spring season. We make a lot of money off of people like your friend that have to replace their tomatoes and their peppers because they put them out too soon. And we're always telling people, you know, you have to wait to put them out. Technically, the last frost date in Madison is supposed to be May 7th. I don't recommend putting them out until May 15th at least, and possibly May 20th. Because you remember a couple of weeks ago where we had snow and then we had like 70 degrees and, it's just April is really difficult to predict, especially these days. And early May is just, well, it's a crapshoot. I mean,
I wait to the end of May.
Yeah, yeah. You don't save much time. And
no.
Growth. And frankly, if the plants are subjected to temperatures under 55, day or night, they can become stunted and unproductive. It's just not a good bet.
I learned my lesson on green peppers one year. I put them out too early. I had really nice pepper plants, but no peppers.
Yeah.
Basically, flowers got killed and that was the end of it. So northern Wisconsin, it's even,
Yeah, much, much later.
for sure. We had Well, I got an email. Listener emailed us, just a second here, with a question about a weed. And I don't know if you can see this, Lisa.
I can't. I don't know whether you have to share your screen or if you can.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the, I can't really, it should be in your email, I guess.
Oh, you can check okay, your, somebody emailed it to me. Awesome.
So you can check the email. Picture of a weed, it continues to spread. They mow the area and probably help spread on the north side of the home. Too many to pick out of the lawn. And wondering for an ID and how do we eradicate?
Okay, it looks to me, the top picture looks like buckthorn, which congratulations, you do have an actual invasive plant that is on the DNR's invasive list. So this is a tree seedling. So I would look for some parent trees. The females would have black berries on them. Unfortunately, however, yours have probably been brought in by birds because birds absolutely love buckthorn berries. And unfortunately, the buckthorn berries tend to have a laxative effect. So the birds are quite efficient at dumping seeds, particularly in places where they're perching often. But yeah, so I would look for the parent. The DNR has a publication on buckthorn and some strategies for getting rid of it. Since it's in the lawn and it's a broadleaf, at least you could, if you wanted to, use one of the broadleaf killers as long as it is labeled for lawn and buckthorn or tree seedlings.
Carlene in Oregon, we'll go to you now. Hi, Carlene.
Hi there. I wanted to chime in a little bit on putting things out too early. I had a beautiful Chicago fig that had given me two seasons of 60 figs and put it out last year too early and killed it. but my question is actually about red aphids. I have beautiful Heliopsis. And last year, the new growth on them became infested with with red aphids. I sprayed it hard with, you know, the hose to get them off and did not spray them with any kind of insecticide. I'm thinking of ordering some wasps, that parasitic wasps that you know, lay their eggs in these red aphids, but I'm wondering if there's an easier way to get rid of them. They haven't come back yet this year, and I'm watching carefully.
Yeah, again, on native plants, it's usually not such an issue, but I understand you're wanting to get rid of them as well. Yeah, if you wanted to go organic, that would be a route. You could try neem oil. That often will work on aphids because they're soft-bodied. So 70% neem oil, and you tried the water already. Insecticidal soap usually works as well.
There you go. Thank you, Carlene. Appreciate it. Marlene in Wales, we'll go to you now. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. I think as I was giving my question to the person who answered the phone, you were answering my question. But my question was, given the weird weather and how nice it is and how much I really want to plant my flowers and plants right now, what would you suggest? I saw in the Farmer's Almanac that May 7th was the last date for hard frost. But I don't know if, you know.
Yeah, keep in mind that is a 50% date. So it depends on how much you like to play the odds. 50% is not high enough for me. I would rather have like an 80% confidence and wait until May 15th. However, if you're talking about perennials, it should be fine to put those in the ground now, unless, you know, they're like wildly grown out or something. But most of the perennials are going to be able to tolerate at least 30 degrees without a big problem.
Without a big
If you're
degree.
Talking about annuals, though, then yeah, you got to be patient. And I'm in the process of horsing mine in and out of the garage overnight. I know it's a big pain, but I'm not enough of a gambler that I would want to go with May 7th.
Okay. Marlene, thank you. Barb in Elkhorn, on to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hi there. Say, Lisa, I wanted to mention, I appreciate that you mentioned moths earlier in the show because they're so important and they're also very beautiful. And I learned more about moths and their night evolution of flowers that are aromatic because I have a Hoya inside and at night it blooms so beautifully. And then I found out that my catalpa tree that blooms, supposedly the moths use the nectar at night. And so the night part of your garden, I'm kind of learning those things as I get older. But I also wanted to tell you that on Tuesday down here in Elkhorn, I saw a yellow swallowtail in my garden. So I was excited. I've seen the little guys. They're kind of orange and black. They're little, and they're usually two or three of them, and they'll be sunning. I've seen them for at least probably 3 weeks a month. But yet, Tuesday was my first yellow swallowtail, so I was kind of excited.
Oh, good for you, Barb. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, you know, I think we are going to have, I'm looking through the calendar here, we might be having a moth program as a webinar at some point here. I'll keep looking while we're talking, but yeah, the poor things are really underappreciated. And June is pollinator month, so we've got a bunch of programs ahead of pollinator month. One that's coming up on June 19th is protecting pollinators while managing pests, and we've got last year's whole list of pollinator program talks, including establishing a bee lawn, designing native plant gardens for pollinators. But I thought we had a moth one.
So how do we access those, Lisa?
Those are on the Wisconsin horticulture site, hort.extension.wisc.edu. Yeah, actually, my butterfly garden design talk is on there as well. And so if you just go to hort.extension.wisc.edu and you look at the what's under the tabs, there is a pollinator tab that you can go to find that information. You can also find our other webinars on other topics, everything from growing garlic in Wisconsin to best practices for watering lawns to no-mow May to pruning apple trees, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, lots up there. And again, it's
port.extension.wisc.edu.
All right. And maybe Clara can post that up on our show today, ideas@wpr.org/Larry. Go to today's date. And in the comments description of the program, if you click on that, you'll find that. Clara just sent me a note. Okay, I'll do that. So there you go.
Thank you, Clara.
Thanks, Clara. Ed in Juneau, it's on to you now. Hi, Ed.
Hello. My question is about apple trees and pruning. I have a couple apple trees that came with the house I bought. It appears they were not trimmed or pruned for a few years. A lot of stems are going straight up in the air. My question would be, is it still able to prune those or not?
Not at this time of, not major pruning at this time of year. You can prune suckers around the base. You can prune water sprouts, which are very thin upright growths in the middle of the canopy. But you shouldn't do any major pruning at this point, especially since they're in the process of leafing out. Usually you want to do your pruning in February or March when the plants are dormant. And we have a great publication on pruning apple trees, which is also at that Wisconsin horticulture site. And if you just put in the search box pruning apples, you should come up with that.
All right. There you go, Ed. Thank you very much for calling. John emailed us with a photo, too, and I believe, Clara, you probably have that in your emails. It is a picture of a tree with some vines growing on the tree itself, several vines. Now, John lives in central Wisconsin, and the vines are growing on the south field edge and climbing up the trees, and he's wondering what those vines are. And I'm having trouble myself.
It gets a bit pixelated when I try and increase the size, but it would really help me if they had leaves on them. It could be anything from poison ivy to Virginia creeper to wild grape. So if we can get some photos of it when it has leaves on, that would be really helpful. Or a super-duper good quality close-up might help as well.
Pam and Rhinelander called, couldn't stay with us. Is it safe to plant window boxes in containers right now in northern Wisconsin, in the Rhinelander area?
My guess is probably not.
No, I think it's a little...
Even if you put something like pansies, which is about the only thing that I could think of to put out there, I'm trying to think how many weeks behind us you probably are. Probably have to wait a couple of weeks, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But at in a couple of weeks, you could probably safely put out pansies, petunias, Johnny jump ups, flowering kale or cabbage, and nemesia. Those are all, even stocks are pretty cold tolerant.
Yeah. Donna in Duluth, Minnesota called, couldn't stay with us. Donnie, I should say. He's wondering if it's too late to move his rhubarb. Now he's way
and
up in
where,
Duluth.
Where is he?
Duluth. He's way up north.
I think it should be fine. It's ideal to do it when it's, I like to do it when it's just coming out of dormancy, so I know that it's alive.
Yeah.
ideally you don't want it to be like fully leafed out either. But considering how far north they are, I would think that you're in plenty of time to do that.
How much? Here's another question. How much sun should a peace lily receive? And if you're trying to keep one indoors and you don't get much sun, is there any hope at all?
Actually, they like low light situations. So a north window would be fine. They should not actually have a lot of direct sun because that tends to burn the leaves. But an east location where it gets bright indirect light would be fine. And north, if you want to have it outside for the summer, I would definitely put it under a tree.
And Marty emailed, is starting a backyard garden. They don't have much experience with it. They grow some tomatoes and then some basil. And wondering, would a soil test be worth it? You know, a soil's pH level, a soil test, that would tell them where, you know, what to plant in the garden?
So the question then is...
My question, I think a soil test wouldn't hurt. For starting a garden in a new spot.
Okay.
And they have no gardening experience. If they...
Okay. Okay. First of all, I'm going to recommend a publication that is called, I believe, The Vegetable Garden. It's by Helen Harrison. And it's a pretty complete review of how to set up a vegetable garden. I think a soil test would be a great place to start. If this is a new bed and you haven't done any tilling or anything like that, I just want to prepare you. If you do till, you're probably going to bring up a whole bunch of weed seeds. If your soil is pretty heavy clay, you may want to amend it by tilling in some compost, composted leaves, something on that order. And don't use free compost. Use the good stuff, because you run a risk of importing jumping worms with the free stuff. But yeah, that would be a good place to start. Most vegetables like a pH between 6 and 7. Most of our clay loam soils are good for most vegetables. Vegetables are going to need at least 6 and preferably 8 hours of sun and reasonably moist soil. But yeah, knowing what you're starting with is great. And you can tell the soil lab when you send in your sample, the form that you send in, you'll check off vegetables, and then they will be able to give you advice as to whether or not you do need to add anything or whether you're just fine as you are.
And you go to that site, the soil...
Just search UW Soils Lab.
Yeah, UW Soils Lab, and you get all of the directions. So, I mean, there's no guesswork. They pretty much tell you exactly what to do. Take some soil from maybe different little areas and so forth. And you're going to wind up with some pretty good information. Probably takes, what, a couple weeks?
Yeah, usually, especially at this time of year when they're getting a lot of samples.
Yeah, so I wouldn't waste any time getting those samples, you know, getting online to the UW Soil Testing Lab and get that information and get it off to them quickly, because it'll take a little longer this time of the year, for sure.
Yeah. But you've got time. I mean,
yeah,
it's not terribly late yet, unless you wanted to plant peas or potatoes.
Yeah.
And I still haven't gotten my potatoes in, but I'm this weekend is the weekend.
There you go. Lisa, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today, and we'll look forward to another visit. Thanks.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was fun.
Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. She'll be back, and we will talk with her again. Coming up on Monday on the show, it's a tour of the celestial skies with the authors of the book Chasing the Stars. It's a dandy book. Then we'll learn more about amateur rocket building. So that's Monday at 11. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller.